Call to order our special planning commission meeting on Tuesday, July 13th, at 6 p.m. at 2021 at the Community Rec Center. We'll open the floor for public comment if there's anyone here to address the commission. None, we'll close that part of the meeting and move on to item number three, which is approval of the minutes from the May 11th special planning commission meeting and the May 25th planning commission meeting. Any comments from residents? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion.
I move to approve the minutes from those two dates as stated President Constitution.
Second.
All right, motion and second, any further discussion?
Not voting on anything?
You are, all five of us. Go ahead, Mr. Clark.
Jeff?
All in favor, you say aye.
Aye.
Jeff, can you tell me who seconded? I'm sorry. It was Don. Okay, thank you.
Any opposed? Motion carries unanimous. Move on to item number four, which is review the recommendation and public hearing on final plan approval for Shiny Shop Car Wash located 10002 North 4800 West in the SC1 commercial zone. I will open, maybe we can public hearing first since no one's here.
Can you do a presentation? How are you doing? Please, yeah.
One email is part of, maybe it's part of the public hearing portion. This item, we did receive one email. I'm sorry, this is related to the issue.
It's semi-related, but we'll get to that.
Yeah, okay. So we'll turn the, we'll close the public hearing portion over to staff.
Okay, well, what you have on the screen in front of you is the, are the shiny shell plans for the final shiny shell plans for the car wash and the Grease Monkey food station right there. The plans really haven't changed in a significant manner since you saw them in the preliminary phase. There's been some minor changes to the engineering grading. But overall, everything is as presented before. So I don't know that there's a whole lot to go over in terms of, we've talked about noise before. The vacuums are on the far west side of the building. They're masked by buildings, road, and landscaping on the wall before we get to a residential area. Lighting is going to be contained on site, so I'm not terribly concerned about the light aspect here. The uses are approved. Parking, we talk about parking, but they show on their plans, and I verified this on their site as well, that they do use, so they have parking available for the Grease Monkey to the east, and then just adjacent to it to the west, and then they have all this parking for the doubles at the back of the stall. And I can verify, I saw it on eyes that their employees, if they're overstaffed in a certain hour, the employees will just park in that vacuum stall. So typically have about three employees in Shiny Shell, and due to the nature of this business, I'm assuming most of the cars are queuing up or in the bay, and so this is mostly parking for employees as well. But I do believe that their parking is sufficient for what they're doing. There are a few things that do need to be worked out with this agree with this subdivision. When some back history, when the Gateway subdivision to the south was going in, and when the David Wheatley subdivision to the east was going in, we knew that this road 9980 north and 4700 west needed to be completed. The developer's obligations at the time required them to go 50% plus 10 feet, and if we would have done that, we would have half a road through here and half a road through there. So, what the city did at the time was the city paid for the improvements to be made for the 100% of the width of the road. And so we're working on an agreement on the developer here in making those payments to the city, reimbursing the city for that cost. Benefit to them is that they get to take advantage of that in 2021 and 2018, 2019 dollars, which normally isn't terribly significant, but in today's day and age, it actually is a pretty significant savings. So we're going to work out that They have purchased some water rights, so we just want to make sure that we're verifying that they have sufficient for their need. They provided a few months worth of usages for their other locations, keeping in mind that they do recycle 70% of our water on site and send it back through the system. So we do want to verify that they are turning over adequate water rights for their use. Because their subdivision is completely, if not, well, not completely, but majorly relying upon Hartz for access. This access comes through the Hartz gas station, this access comes through the Hartz gas station, and only this access comes through their own property. That is only allowing them to go in the parking spot, not really accessing anything else. So they'll have to work out an access agreement, with Hartz for these two. And I don't believe that that's going to be a problem. The landscaping, let's go to the landscaping. Second class page two.
Yeah.
Right here. Landscaping plan, for the most part, looks fine. There are a few items on the schedule that they call for that need to be swapped out for items that are for landscaping plants that are food uses. So Jenny's done that homework, and I believe we're going to send them an email on that tomorrow, just swapping out what they approved plants. And then we just want to make sure that they remove this tree right here. It is within a clear vision area, so what we're trying to do is take this line here, and where they meet this point, about 45 feet, and making sure that that triangle is open for clear vision areas for the turf stick.
This plan does not show the plan of the dumpster area on the main.
Say it again.
It's a dumpster enclosure, not, it's not an entrance, so that's not beneficial at all.
This is the plan they sent me yesterday.
Oh, yeah, that's the, you're right. And that's the entry exit, and to the right of it is the actual enclosure.
Oh, yeah, this is the dumpster enclosure right here.
I don't know if you've got an arrow over to that or what.
Does the dumpster enclosure meet the clear vision?
We'll make sure it does.
Do you eliminate that tree, or do you put it somewhere else?
Well, we can ask them to stuff it somewhere else over here or plant somewhere else on the property. They can do that. We can ask them to remove it, relocate it.
I'm just thinking on 4700, maybe you reduce the distance between the trees.
Use the distance. That's a good idea.
I didn't know that. So don't lose the tree.
Say that again.
Just reduce the distance between these trees right here and then just move it to the multi cell, compact them so they're all still there, but they're just.
So we still have the four trees?
Yeah.
So how high is that tree enclosure?
That's what we need to determine. So it's going to be higher than the 3 feet that's allowed. So, so we just need to make sure that that enclosure doesn't block any vision area. If they do, they'll need to relocate it, which should be an issue. They can, even if they just moved it right here,
Or move it in further.
Well, you don't want to move it in further because then the dump trucks can have a hard time, the garbage trucks can have a hard time moving it out. The reason this is a nice spot is that the garbage truck pull in. The front loaders, they pick up the dumpster, dump, and you can back out and move out. So this is a really nice location for a dumpster, but it doesn't work. It doesn't work for a nice place.
Are you really confident of the joint easement agreement?
Oh, yeah, because that was part of their, the reason I'm confident in that is that it was part of their land sale agreement. This land was purchased from Hartz gas station, or Hartz gas station owned this property. So that's part of their agreement. So that's okay. So we'll make sure that the back clear vision area is open.
So if that clear vision area perhaps the big thing that you're worried about?
I'm not worried
about it. I mean, but
yeah.
The issue is big.
No, I'll get to the big thing I'm worried about.
Okay.
And it's not even that big, I don't believe. And then obviously anything that we do here is obviously subject to final engineering review. That's always just kind of underlying condition. But to the, Steve, to your point, the fire has two items that they want to have addressed on the site plan. Is that the nearest fire hydrants, there's a fire hydrant located right here, right to the south of the Taco, or to the north of Taco, south of the building. This gives them a nice way to supply the fire on this side of the building. There's a few fire hydrants on this side that allow the fire fighting capabilities on this side. There's the nearest fire hydrant on this, where this portion of the building goes right here. So we're going to need to see a fire hydrant installed somewhere in this vicinity here. That's one thing. And then the second thing, this is one that hasn't been concerned, but I don't know how we'll be concerned if they just get the plan for it, is that in order to access for public safety, there needs to be some cutout here. And so public safety, the fire marshal was asking for a cutout access point for this check-in here in place that will allow ambulances, fire trucks to get in and be able to move through the site with a gate. So it wouldn't be open to the public and just be shut and then the fire wouldn't have it.
So it'd be curb cut or everything?
It'd be curb cut with asphalt. It looked like normal. It looked like a straight approach, just like we see here. It's just not. It's just gated off.
So do you have questions, comments from the commissioners?
Please use your microphones too.
I have kind of an issue with the landscaping of the 26%. And I'm supportive of the amendment that's proposed to reduce that. But until that is passed by the city council, I think it's premature for us to be doing something for the code as it is. And so that's it. It's hard to, if there were plan A that was 30%, plan B that was 26%, we could prove both plans on the condition of this. Or with a provision for them to resubmit the plan just to prove this.
I'm okay with that. That if in the event that the council does not approve the landscaping code changes, that they must submit the plan which shows 30% landscaping. I'm okay with that. And I say that because I'm fairly confident that the city council is going to approach the landscaping code with an eye toward approval, just given that. We're trying to find areas in the city to reduce landscaping watering requirements, and commercial land is great because of work, because it's really just aesthetics. So you can still have a very nice commercial district if you want. I don't think we're going to notice the district 30-23. If you look at Walmart, you think that that's 30% landscaping?
that long run.
It's long run, and I saw the cars, a couple of these lanes are usually membership, and they have a system where it reads your license plate. Very big brother asked, but they have your license plate, lifts the gate, they move them through, very quick. So, not terribly concerned about the shooting there. I'm more concerned about people here on busy days, they can get out.
Yeah, that was, I remember.
Never saw it done.
You pull in to get it back, and you kind of bag out, and you stack.
That's gonna be kind of a mess, but. So hopefully they grab their employees and park down there first. Otherwise they might have to back out and then run through.
I don't know that I've ever seen Hart's parking lot completely full. Do they do a parking sharing that their employees do?
Yeah, they've got additional parking they're adding in here. So for the employees themselves, I think there's completely adequate parking. It's just, you know, these vacuum stalls down here under South End and Southwest Warren, they're not great. Stay away from them. But I think that they're parked adequately for their employees between Grease Monkey and Car Wash. But Hart's, I mean, I've seen Hart's get pretty full on some occasions.
I'm not down there.
When you get a few tractor trailers pulling in with boats, and they can fill pretty fast. They like to park. They like to park there while they have one there.
So who is actually adding the parking up there?
So they asked, they requested the city council planning commission to consider some condition use changes of what's allowed in this parcel. And we discussed it a couple months ago, and the consensus was with the amount of development that's happening across the street, the nature of this commercial zone could change drastically given that you add 800 rooftops in the next couple of years. This could be more viable commercial space, so it's not just turn over the office at this moment.
Or open air book clerk.
Yeah, or open air book clerk. That's not these guys. So. Let's not do that.
Okay. Any other questions, comments? I'll entertain a motion. To item number 5, review of recommendation of amendments to City Code Title 10608 landscaping and approved uses in the commercial zone.
So, actually, I had a public hearing this last month, so not a public hearing, but I'm happy to talk about the comments that were raised by this county regional commissioner earlier today.
Here.
Yeah, I can stop reading. So, I'm going to go ahead and read that. Proceed to the topic.
This is a letter addressed to City Hills Planning Commission, not the commission owners. I'm writing to recommend that we don't amend our current commercial slot landscape. When too much rain falls with the sun aggravates the heat of summer, however, these days, we have adapted our planning efforts to mitigate for it, such as the need for landscaping ordinances to reduce the risk of flooding while the urban asphalt extreme heat out of there. These strategies only work in a dispersed manner throughout the city, which is the sun shines and the rain falls on every acre. Development which reduces green, softscape, or small bioretention assets in a particular area will decrease its protection from flood. It would also increase the temperature of that area, leading to higher air conditioning costs and higher discomfort for customers and pedestrians and others at that location. Additional benefits of more commercial landscaping are better aesthetics and air quality. I think it's important that we maintain our current code. Have to agree with somewhere else in Heritage Park and not to anybody with any more local cars. Side of Sherry County, 4221 West Oak Road, New York.
So we've talked about this proposal where the current code requires 30% of commercial land to be landscaped. And in everything I've heard from developers in our cities, this is actually fairly high in terms of requirements for commercial development. So if you think about what's over 9 acres to be a big project, you can imagine 3 of that being just grass, trees, rocks. So you want, I think there's a nice balance here where you want to create an environment that is aesthetically pleasing, that draws customers in, that is a nice gateway to the community as our commercial area sits on the edge of town. But also recognizing that the purpose of the commercial area is to generate sales tax, to generate places where people go and do services really for convenience purposes. So I recognize that there is some balance here. So what we're proposing is that there is this allowance that developers can go down to 23%, provided that they make this contribution to the city that would then be used for other landscaping purposes throughout the community, thereby maximizing their commercial land available to development of actual commercial uses. But at the same time, still providing for some of those aesthetic improvements throughout the community, not just in the commercial zone, but in parks or park strips, other areas elsewhere in the city that you can need some attention. So I don't believe it's going to be a patch of green somewhere in Heritage Park. I do think that there is some aesthetic projects that we're working on, beautification efforts. And I'm not talking just like a pallet of flowers that you planted in the spring and every other part. Long-term actual projects. But a goal of the city council is to find ways to conserve water. We have areas in the city that require sprinkling systems, require irrigation, that in all reality, they really provide no use to the community. So you think about some of these islands in the middle of roads that have grass. This is one of the areas that we're looking at. That you have grass here, you're watering it, and every time a sprinkler is on, almost every day, I get a call with somebody saying, you're wasting water. You have this narrow strip of land, and some of it is bound to go into the street, and I am bound to get a call. So what we're looking at, and I recognize that this land is pretty to have grass there. I want to preserve the aspect of the trees there, but I recognize that this isn't land that's usable to the public. So we want to find ways to reduce our water requirements. I'd love to get those onto drip systems so they're not spilling into the streets. That would save us a lot of headache and community. They want us to have smart timers on every single one of our zones. Well, I have hundreds and hundreds of zones in the city. I can't afford smart controllers on every single one of them. So some of these areas where they're not useful for the public, I'd like to rip out, find ways to reduce the water consumption by the city, and do so in a way that still gives that look that Cedar Hills has and enjoys when you drive into the city. So that's why I like this approach to the code, is that it expands those efforts beyond just the commercial zone. It takes commercial zone 23%, I feel like, still a good number for landscaping, but at the same time allows for the city to make these enhancements to landscaping. To the flood aspect, all of the hardscape is calculated and retained in retention basis, so I don't believe that the flood aspect of our email is should be of a concern, in that we design these chambers for a 100-year event. I'd love to have a 100-year event sometime, so we really can use it. But so you see, one of the previous plan we just looked at, in the parking lot, as you make the turn into the queue to the to get in line with the car wash, there's some underground chambers there that will retain the water and let that percolate to the ground. So there are mechanisms in place to retain that water and put it back into the aquifer. So with that being said, I know we've talked about this before, but I'd love to hear your questions, concerns, comments, anything.
So can you walk us through the proposed calculation?
Yeah, so on a subdivision, let's pull this over one. This shows the site plan that you can see here in the site tabulation. You can see the total area at 60,645 square feet, building area 8,580 feet, impervious, that's their asphalt, curb gutter, sidewalks, that's 36,925 square feet, and landscape 15,120 square feet at 25%. A lot of times you'll take, so in this case, they're looking at, we're looking at the whole site, right? But when, let's just use Taco Bell and Gateway, let's use them as an example. In this case, they would actually net out the road, because the road takes up so much space. So they net out the road, and then we take this area here, it's going to be 30% of that. So you take 30% of that, 1,645 square feet, that'd be your normal calculation for what you'd be looking for in this landscape field right now. But if they came in with a proposal of 0.5 square feet, 0.5%, we would take that difference between what would be the 30% and the proposed 0.3, 0.4, 0.5%, that's for footage, and then multiply it by an improved landscape plan with an estimate of first footage per square footage. So that's something that we don't actually require right now. If you want to take advantage of this, they have to see.
So this is a range between 23% and 30%, yeah. Whatever that.
Yeah, so if they say, okay, well, we got space to do, because in this case, they found space to do 25, right? Let's say that it was 28, well, they're looking at a fairly minor contribution to the city in that case to do 2%. Even 25%, I think, is not a huge contribution to the city in terms of dollar amounts, but it's up to the city to make that money go far, find ways where we can use it. But does that make sense? So in this case, they would have to provide the dollar amount that becomes the 1.5 multiplier.
Per square foot,
yes. Before, we had talked about a one to one ratio, and I felt like the planning commission's direction was they wanted to see that LD of 1.5. Is that correct?
I think we were concerned about not losing track of the ongoing cost of maintenance,
yeah.
Providing potential incentive to the developer to avoid that cost.
It does provide an incentive for the developer to provide stuff to lose to minimize some of the ongoing maintenance costs. But it would be contingent on the city to show the receipt of those funds and the expense of those funds in the appropriate manner.
So
I think that there's There's expenditure line items already in place that we can demonstrate the use of the funds through our ARPS budget. It would just require the necessitated creation of an expense line item, or sorry, revenue line item that showed the receipt of these funds for this purpose. So in case anyone on the audit, they just see this, we can show, okay, here's money we received, here's the receipts go out.
Yeah, I'm in favor of having any contribution go to the same place. So if there's no claim, there's preferential treatment.
Yeah, that's actually why I like the formula. It's very straightforward. You can save as much as you want up to a point, but then it becomes very clear as to what that dollar amount is. And you know, any engineer estimate or landscaping engineer estimate of the cost of development would be reviewed, so if they couldn't lowball it.
That was my first question.
So I don't review those. We send everything like that out to the engineer to review. So in this case, our city engineer is going to college, and they actually have landscape architects on staff that will review the cost and say, hey, this is out of line with today's dollars, this needs to be changed. And even on our landscape, or not our landscape, even on our engineer estimates for example, these improvements, you know, they provided an itemized list of the work that they did, square footage, asphalt where linear feet of concrete, and that was all reviewed by the city engineer saying, okay, these prices look like they're in line with today's dollars.
Yeah. I have a comment about the wording. Okay. Looking at the ordinance, it's in subsection 4. The developer shall determine square footage difference between 30% required landscaping and proposed 23% landscaping. This one's 45.
Mm-hmm.
So I suggest removing the 23%.
So as you say, in the second, I see what you're saying, it'd be a second, 23%, because the first one sets a floor.
Yes.
So it'd be the second one. So that you could say the developer shall determine square footage difference between 30% required landscaping and the proposed landscaping plan.
That's correct.
And then just strike that 23%.
Other questions?
Okay. Do you have any indication in there? So we're recommending this to council, correct?
Correct.
And do you have any idea of what their thoughts on this are? This is something
they have. I think they're supporters. I'm reading tea leaves.
How big is it?
I say that because I know that there is awareness, and talked a number of times on council about water conservation. Because, quite frankly, throughout the community, we are using way too much water, and it's. I'm just going to speak freely. Until secondary meters go in, people will use too much water. It's just the way it is. We're in the desert, but people like to think that they're not. And we have some really heavy water users, and I even have to cut back my own staff sometimes on their water use. And I have almost a daily conversation with developers about water use. Say, you guys have to find a sweet spot between lush green and dead. Find it. I'm okay with some dead spots and dry spots. That's so worse. I think by and large the council recognizes any measure to reduce water consumption is a good measure.
So this is not converting landscaping to something with less water, it's removing landscaping for up to 81%. Correct. Like it's not like putting in deer scaping or rock or whatever.
No, it's removing landscaping on the site here, and then it's taking those dollars that would be used for landscaping here and moving them somewhere else. So it could be.
But I can make it a building or a bigger parking lot because I'm not doing it on the site.
Yes, you can build a bigger building or you can expand your parking as needed.
Right.
that raises a good question. Is this intended to have retroactive effect?
No.
So maybe that needs to be maybe stated a little clearer that this would be for only new development.
Are we going to get in trouble for that specific review? Some of Walmart comes to us and says, oh, we want to tear everything out and make a little fund, and is that okay?
No, but they could update their landscaping plan to develop their efficiency at that point.
And maybe offset.
Because it'd be a new landscaping plan. I mean, so you see to your, not see, but to your prompt point, you could say proposed landscaping plan to see that this code was adopted or been adopted. I don't know how you want to work that, but clearly indicating that this is going forward, not retroactive. But that would not stop somebody like Walmart from saying, hey, but I want to revisit some of our landscaping.
Well, to be clear, I don't have a problem if someone wants to go to the effort to make that change. I don't think I have a problem with that, but I think we need to be clear on that.
So, I don't know that this is exactly the same problem, but you know, as this becomes more commercial, the walkability and the traffic are at odds with, you know, kind of the open space stuff. It's hard to walk in, and there's a lot more people walking here. The traffic is pretty intense and getting more so. And we add, you know, 800 more units across the street, not us, but it's going to get even more that way. Is loosening up on this going to affect the walkability and the accessibility of these projects? I don't know that a little bit. I think it's a little bit different.
I do think that they're related. But I think when people are looking at developing a landscaping plan for a commercial area, walkability kind of becomes the first thing in the jar, right? It's not the last thing that comes off. So when you're talking about, okay, well, we've developed 23% of the landscaping on the site, walkability, the sidewalks, how you move around on the site is already part of it. It's not the 28-29%. It's usually already installed at that point. Yeah, so I mean, walkability is always a concern. That's why you see the addition of sidewalk coming through here. I don't know if the box for a car wash, but you somebody do that.
Did you say through a car wash?
It walks into a car wash or through. You know, there's probably a number of prepositions you can use there. So, I mean, on this site, they've obviously demonstrated, hey, look, you can walk to us. But I just don't know that that. Our complete environment, I don't think that is probably going to be taken advantage of.
I think that's building a requirement.
It is. But from the ADA parking stalls, you know. But to be able to walk, you want to walk to every site, but I mean, thinking about walking to a car wash.
And I guess walking the car wash was my point. My point is that the sidewalks.
Sidewalks don't count for
it. They're small. And, you know, there's a lot more traffic than they used to be, more noticeable and all that. You know, I guess sidewalks could, depending on what you use, right? If you use.
I guess if you use pavers, but I don't know.
Pavers or permeable something here, you know, that kind of thing. People don't like that. Not as hard.
With sidewalks, let's not get too creative. Let's just make this concrete,
right? Alright, so that was kind of my related thing. Yeah.
No, I think with the use of the money, with the use of the funds, I think you'd see the city try to find areas of the city to reduce our own landscaping or watering obligations. Like I was saying, with some of these park strips, some of these. Entrances to the city. You have there's all sorts of enhancements in the city. And it's not going to be life changing. No.
Yeah. It's going to be what did the city attorney say after reviewing?
I think they're okay. They're okay with this. Yeah. I mean, you just have to show that you're not being arbitrary and capricious. And so that's why the formula comes in terms of. If you're treating everyone the same, then the city has the right to change their code. We're not.
Was it you that asked about what previous?
previous development came in and now it has changed. And so, sorry, somebody asked me. But really the thing that the developers of previous commercial developments hang their hat on is if you're going to make us do all brick, or you're going to make us use as much brick, better make up and use as much brick.
That was our argument on the post approach. Other people have asked if you can sit down and probably shouldn't.
We'll see if to show a rational basis for being not enclosed.
Yeah.
Which I think it does, but that's how you make it viable.
So if the decision becomes arbitrary and capricious, you say, well, for you guys, it's going to be a 3.5 mile. I mean, that just reads.
And in addition, I understand that the city's going to make sure they can withstand all of the borough's funds.
Yeah. So if somebody said, well, I want to make sure that my funds, I'm going to check with you guys in, you know, 2 years to make sure that the funds I spent are used for hands up for somewhere in the city, a lot of seats. So you better show.
Yeah, because it says specifically monetary contribution towards landscaping efforts.
So it's kind of like a revolving fund, restricted voting fund, or restricted.
You're kind of restricted funds.
Funds and it can only use that.
Yeah, but, you know, we already spend, I'm not worried about the city spending money on landscaping. It's very expensive. A lot of money. It's just so expensive. So if, let's say that we budgeted, $30,000 for landscaping. That you receive a $2,000 contribution to the city for this purpose. I think it would make sense on the city's part to go back into a budget amendment that $30,000, $32,000, showing that they received the money they intend to expend. And maybe this year, in that fiscal year, maybe in the next fiscal year.
I think anyone's interested. Maybe transparent or not, I mean, that should be that. Other folks have done this?
Yes.
No, maybe.
No.
No.
I know they don't require 30%.
And then we have, just because we want to be green and zero.
Well, I think that we have a. How many people are on the planning commission? We have the design guidelines. We have okay, well, you remember going into those. There were, honestly, and I think there's still some of it found in the code, but it's a lot of pie-in-the-sky visions of what the commercial zone will be, right? I just don't see a reality where that ever comes to be. So it's like downtown walking areas with plazas and fountains and, you know, social gathering areas. I mean, where's the store? There's not that much land here.
Well, the code where the guidelines just said shall consider density. So nothing beyond that.
It's poorly written, but some of that vision kind of carried through to the code. So that's, I mean, we want walkability, but there's still the emphasis on, like, hey, if you, there's still something like this in code that if you put in a fountain, you get a 5% reduction. That's already in the code. So if no one's gonna put in a fountain. So there's already provisions, but this kind of monetizes it. There's another area.
Car wash company?
I guess if it's looking outside.
Yeah. This seems a little different than, and I wasn't here with the last commission to go whenever. Sorry. Seems a little different, but
it is a little
theory, I'm okay with it.
It is a little different. I'll give you that. Anytime I talk to a developer about it, though, they're all in favor of it.
Oh, of course they are. What developer wouldn't be all that?
Well, it's not something like, well, this should still be lower. No, they're okay with this. I've spoken with developers. Keeping in mind that there's really not that much commercial development left in the city. There's a couple acres in Gateway. There's a piece on Daily Weekly property. CUP 74. That's it. So we're not talking a lot.
I don't see how it could become a heat island with five pieces of wood.
I don't see it.
Especially if it's broken up by buildings with.
I think sometimes a draft code, like we have State Street to develop. We don't, but nevertheless.
The closest thing to a heat island is Walmart parking lot.
They got 30%.
The only other heat in Honor makes island.
Well, is there any more feedback I can talk about?
And so, any more questions or comments? So, I'll entertain a motion.
I move that we approve the proposed code amendments to Cedar Hill City Code 10-68-4 related to landscaping in a commercial area. That's it, right? Removing the 23% second.
I'll second.
Motion and second. Was that clear? Is that okay?
I have it, but I didn't see who seconded.
I'm sorry.
Okay, thanks.
I got it.
Any further questions or comments? Seeing none, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Move on to our final item. Item number six, review recommendation of amendments to City Code Title 10-538 related to groundwater removal and energy systems.
If there was a concern if the home is
has a higher elevation in the back of the property. It would be harder to affix the panels. Again, if they didn't exceed the ridge line of the roof, because there are significant elevation changes in some of these properties. If they didn't exceed the elevation of the roof, stayed under that 6 feet, you didn't see an issue with that. Planning Commission, you suggested that we evaluate these on a case-by-case basis. That would inherently come in if they want to put these on a pole type of a system. Then we would do what is called the non-administrative conditional use approval. The other thing that we looked at was the surface. You wanted a percentage for the coverage of the rear yard area or the surface of the solar. We have a 5% here for a rear lot area. This is an arbitrary number. It can be more or less per your recommendation. But if we give an example, say 5% for a 5,000 square foot, it would be about 250 square feet for a solar panel, which is pretty adequate for a 5,000 square foot backyard. The problem, the issue that we have is that we do have code that has structures in the rear yard area not to exceed 50%. So that may be something that we would look at if it would cover more than 50% coverage. The other item is, and this is per our building official, Deb Vaughn, what his recommendation is on the fencing, you know, to make sure that before we sign off on it, that the enclosure is there, the fencing is already up for closing out with permits. Again, safety was also reviewed by the building official. Another concern was the glare. Some of the wording on for glare was not just for the actual solar panels. Some of the new solar panels, as Chandler suggested, they already addressed the glare issue on a lot of these. Where this pulls out is the framing around it to reduce that to minimal, to also reduce the glare.
So most of these are going to be aluminum or galvanized steel anyways. They're not going to have a whole ton of glare. We're not talking about the stainless frames. That's wasting. So the glare is going to be minimal. And most of, you can get these aluminum mount surface as well on the panel, so it's going to, there will be some reflection, not a lot. And if we're below 6 feet, you're not going to see anything.
Well, if you're on a higher elevation, say you're on Sage Road and you're up on, about Sage Road.
Oak Road,
up there, and you're looking down, you're going to see them regardless. We do want to reduce the
glare. Yeah, they're going to be, I mean, they're going to be pointed to southwest,
correct,
most likely, and so they're not going to be reflecting up to you. It's going to be back toward.
Right. And the purpose, the reason why we did the 6 feet, it gives them the option if they want to use the topography of the hill, they can use that instead of putting them on poles and angle them on frames and place them on the property that way. There was two other changes too at the bottom. The building official requested that we clean up the language there on the last. Four on any agreement for an easement that was cleaned up and restoring the land to pre-installation conditions. So I'm open to recommendations or suggestions.
Yes, I'm looking on section 4, subsection 2, small bedroom systems. Small systems less than 3 feet in diameter or width. I think that can be gained. Section panels 3 feet wide, 7 feet long. Maybe they wouldn't do it here, but it will last. would suggest just set a number, a square foot. It happens that a 3 foot diameter circle is 7 square feet. So it's a separate or whatever, not a big number, just set a number, X many square feet. And I would also suggest that they say that that is aggregate walls, systems on site. So you don't have 5 different systems.
And this would be strictly for the small bedroom?
Yes, because they're exempt from permit requirements and restrictions in this section. So number, say it's aggregate total.
I did have a comment on the same question. For the yard line, do you add security to that as well? For security cameras? The code and bond above 6 feet.
That's good.
So it's something that had a 3 foot diameter on the width. So you're saying 3 foot width, so you're not going to be any system less than 9 square feet. Qualifies as a small bedroom system. And if you're talking about total aggregate, it would vary in the middle of the multiple.
So do we want to keep that at a 9 foot aggregate total?
I think so. I think that's
Alright, anyway, if you have 6 motion sensor lights around your house, all the motion sensor lights, the total combined square foot of those lights, if you have motion sensor lights, cameras, security cameras, you could put the
and this is, again, I'm not wed to a number, whether it's
just a number.
Just a number. But the panels that I've seen are, you know, 1 square foot or so.
Yeah, and I wouldn't consider any of that ground. I think that would be
just
attached
that
to like this, the decorative piece.
Yeah.
But again, I think of talking about like sticking the ground lights or, you know, something like that versus if it's attached to the house, then I don't, there's not as much restriction. It's part of the house, part of the house system. We're talking about ground mounted, frame mounted, pole mounted, tilt, rotating, whatever, solar.
Yeah.
And I think this is, yeah, I don't think the security lights are gonna leave me part of that.
Yeah. Do we worry about aggregate? I mean, we're not gonna go out and fix it.
This is going to be very hard to enforce.
Or I think you're right, so I could take a 250 square feet and divide it over the yards.
Well,
so developers in Utah are probably more highly involved than us. That's what would happen up there.
I'm not easy.
No, okay. I understand.
I've got questions on that.
Okay.
So this will be back at number 3, new letter C. Finish level of any ground mounted solar energy devices set on more than 6 feet above grade at any point. We say except where approved in a, I don't know, I'm trying to combine the first and second sentences, not necessarily in one sentence, but you almost want to state the first sentence and say except as follows. Or something like that, because we're saying they're not allowed anywhere. And then in the very next sentence, we say they are allowed with a non administrative condition use. So you might say except in the instance.
Exception would be.
Yeah.
Okay. Exception would be any ground mounted solar device with any price exceeding 640 at any point shall be allowed only with an non administrative condition use.
Something like that. And when you say a device with a height exceeding 6 feet at any point above grade on the survey, you're talking about somebody could build a system, say they're down in the valley or whatever, but we're talking about looking at each situation individually. They could build a system that's actually taller than 6 feet above grade. Is that right?
No, it would be at any point, 6 feet above grade at any point. So if their grade is, say, they put it closer to their home, that the highest they could be is would be the 6 foot, unless they have this additional use.
Yeah, this goes back to my comment a couple of weeks ago, that they got such different heights and elevation. And they want to say, I don't know. When I read this, moderately intelligent guy that I am, I read it as I could build a system taller than 6 feet if I was thrown down in below. I get what you're trying to say.
Do you want to say that it's just like as measured from grade where the surface is mounted, or because that's really what they're trying to say?
What you're saying is no one's going to be able to build a device that's more than 6 feet above grade.
But it's above the grade that it's located on. So it's, to Jenny's point, if they live on a slope, you know, in their backyard, they want to put a solar panel on the back property line, it's going to be higher than the grade in the front yard.
Right.
And so that's where I think the language needs to be maybe cleared up then, is if we just say at grade from the location of the solar panel.
So there was a story about a developer who was going to try to put in a black hole and it exceeded the maximum height. And so when he built a hill and put it on there and met the maximum height, I can see that happening. I mean, like, it's whatever ground height we can get, and then put it on top of, there's a burn coming.
Well, and I think the intent here is that if their house is quite a bit lower elevation, and they want to put them on the back of their property, which is high elevation, we just don't want that to be over the roof line or over that fence line. That's the intent.
So, if you said that it shall not be more than 6 feet above the lowest point of grade on the block, I understand that. And then the only exception, any requested exemptions to this requirement shall, you know, be allowed under the non-administrative condition of use approval. Maybe that's all you need to say.
What would be 6 foot from the highest?
And that's what you're asking for an exemption. Well, maybe that's the rule.
Have there been a significant number of requests about this? Is my first question.
No. There's a few, though.
Yeah.
There's a few that come in, but they have the tendency to be egregious to neighbors.
I think Jared has it right. In the first sentence, I apologize, it shall not be more than 6 feet above grade, above the highest point of grade on the upper block. So that you could build it at the top of your property, 10 feet away, 6 feet high.
Isn't, I apologize for not knowing this code better. Isn't the definition of grade the ground right there?
It is.
Fence, you measure out of the fence ground. And here you measure top of the solar panel to the ground. That's 10 feet away is the ground sloping up, and you have different right there, but the solar panel is here. That's where the grade is.
See, and then this is how I interpret this when the solar energy device shall not be more than 6 feet above the lowest grade at any point. That doesn't allow for the highest one. So from the highest grade. But then that's in the interpretation that they can put it higher if it's closer to the home at that lower grade.
The way I read it was that, it doesn't matter that I can go get an administrative exception anytime I want. Like, this is a guideline, but there's not, if I want.
Right.
That's the way I would say it.
This is where it's reviewed by a case-by-case basis.
Not as
a... But then, that case-by-case...
Well, let me address the non-administrative, because it's not, the word non is not found anywhere in our code with relation to administrative conditional use approval. Conditional uses should by just inherently be administrative decisions. So this goes back to the conditional use approval code, in that the city council, planning commission, they set the expectations of what you're trying to mitigate with the conditional use permit. And then it's up to the administration to determine if it meets those criteria. Conditional use approvals should be administrative by nature of Utah State Code.
I.e. staff,
yes.
So if you say non-administrative...
So on my notes, I was going to make a point to cross off the word non, because that non is not... We have no reference to
the
a non-administrative...
Was not making them go through that.
Yeah. I think that's a little bit cumbersome.
But what kind of exception are you going to do? What a homeowner would be looking at? If they can only build it 6 feet above the highest point of grade on the property, what really exception?
Yeah, well, she was saying pull down.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
15 feet tall or 20 feet tall. That's
yeah, for example, if they wanted to put it closer to their property and it still would be non-intrusive, and they could put it on a pole, and it would still meet underneath that 6 foot high fence and be underneath the top of the roof.
So that
would be reviewed.
Can I ask for a taller than 6 foot installation in any case?
Yes, and that's what would be reviewed on that administrative if they were to put it on a pole.
But to Steve's point, I don't think it's a rubber stamp.
Yeah, it has to be. It has to be reviewed in light of the conditions, what is it, 10, 5, 39, 37, that shows the what we are talking about in terms of what we're looking for in terms of a conditional use. So there are some specific things that we're looking at, and in this case, it would probably be height, the neighborhood, the
proximity
to the property lines. I mean, because you could have somebody that has a huge property that, yeah, they could build up 15 feet and nobody would see it. So in that case, you hate to treat every property the same, but there are properties with some extenuating circumstances.
There's a lot of home codes around this stuff.
I would like to just ban it, but that's just me.
And there were a couple of other things that I saw that kind of gave me a little bit of heartburn. One of them was the setbacks. So, well, I missed this part. Why do we do the 10 feet setbacks? I mean, if it's below the fence line, nobody can see it anyways. What's the point of saying you can't be able to climb?
Most,
it's mostly a temporary structure.
Most of the time, the 10-foot setback is to keep them out of easements.
Another issue that did come up with some of these rotating solar panels that will rotate, once they rotate them, it sometimes may be cross property lines. So, and that is an issue. So by pulling it back at 10 feet too, you're not only staying out of the easement, but you're accommodating those solar panels you rotate.
Most of them aren't fixed. The ones that we install them aren't fixed. Kind of rotating them don't do very well here. And the old ones here, and the wind is blowing, and makes it hard. There's a few, I guess, around. But
yeah, and to be honest, we do have one that was, because it did meet the accessory structure, we did allow it quite in front of the property line.
Mm-hmm.
And when it does rotate, it does cross property line.
Yeah, the other thing that I thought was about the water, stormwater conveyance. So a lot of people actually want to put these on detention ponds, and the only really big hindrance to that is you make sure that the electricals are above the flood line. So do you gotta be above where if it flooded, those aren't sitting underwater. So like the inverters and the switches and whatever else are all mounted above where they are and the line is projected. So that would be an interesting.
They do that in retention basins?
Yeah, so you
it's like the homeowner owns the retention basin?
Or commercial.
So then that in that case, right, because most of the retention basins within the city are either owned by the city or an HOA. I can only think of one retention basin that is privately owned.
And usually it's really hard to get to solar.
Yeah.
But yeah, so retention bases are a really great place to site solar because there's not anything else you can put there really. And so you can put it there and just make sure that the electrical is protected. So maybe there was a reason why you guys did it that way, but there's some other code from other places that talks about that if you're interested.
I don't know if we would particularly approve a solar panel that's not on their property. If it's on the city property,
you legally can't buy power from anywhere else but the power company. If you can't generate it somewhere else and buy it at your house, that's unique. So if you can only buy it from Rocky Mountain Power, or you can self-generate on your property. So there wouldn't be an option like that. So. I was thinking more along the lines of commercial with a detention basin with one of people's, but if it's not.
There's no retention basins in the commercial area that are not owned by the city, though.
Okay.
I see what you're saying, though. I recognize what you're saying. I can't think of an instance when that would apply here.
So those have all been put on stormwater easements or whatever?
Well, they're turned over to the city.
Okay.
So they become the city's property. It's like the one behind Walmart, that's the city's property. The one next to the storage units, that's the city's property now.
Point two, subsection D, just the wording. Total surface area of the raised ground and solar device on property shall not exceed more than 5% distance. More than, that's out more than, shall not exceed 5%.
There was another calculation I saw, was 25% of the square footage of the footprint of the building. And so that would maybe give you a little more or a little less depending on. That's another way to do it too. So you don't have this massive array. You've got one that's much smaller than the house footprint. So you're not
right. And the 5% is that is up for discussion. That can be what you guys decide on this. One thing that we're concerned again that we have is that 15% required landscaping in a rear yard area construction, and that was. My concern is, are we going to not meet that if we increase this too much?
Yeah, I don't see these as accessory buildings or as permanent structures. It's a frame, and you can plant grass around it. You just weed around it or whatever you want to do. Like if there's not, it's still open space. Absolutely, it's still open space. There's no like. Reducing landscaping, and then may have a couple of concrete points under it, but there's still grass, there's still open space underneath it. It just happens to have a.
But we've gotten them.
About the size of a sheet of plywood.
We've gotten them where there's footings, foundations, they're on poles, and they're big panels that rotate around.
But
and so in this case, yeah, it's because you're in these. What's that?
The base is only this.
Right, but it's still permanent.
But that base and the panel square footage, like that base isn't cutting into any open space or landscape.
So the kind of the way that we've always treated temporary or
like
permanent audience. Versus temporary structures, like think about sheds, is we allow sheds that are under 120 square feet to be in an easement.
Yeah.
Because if we have an emergency and we need to move that shed, we can go there, lift it up, and move it. But if it starts getting bigger than that, then I have to spend a couple days to dismantle the shed before I can do work in the easement.
Well, so, these aren't going in easements, though, right?
No, but they are structures. And by building code, anything constructed is considered a structure. It's such a vague term.
I mean, I'd like to see this rotating one that you're talking about, because that seems excessive. But
I can send you.
Most of the ground mounted one is that I know we're not like that.
You want to see? I can pull up pictures right now and show you.
Well, there's tons of ways to go, but yeah, usually I'm just seeing some skeleton frame or not. Building. But there's 50 ways to do it, just like most other construction.
That's right. That's the same concern. That if we do put a number there, no matter what number that is, then the argument is this a permanent structure? If the answer is yes, then we shouldn't be limiting that at all. That are included in that 50%.
And I know we're trying to prevent things like that one over.
This services the house below.
Below.
This house right here. That does seem excessive. And the residential.
Do they have the property?
They have the property.
The home is below.
Yeah, it's just hard to see them all.
Well, got to keep in mind that this particular ground solar, we did not have a culvert for it at the time.
So let's say, then we went back to that whole accessory building idea. Would you be able to put an accessory building in that same place, taking up the same space?
Because an accessory structure, you can't put it up 5 feet to the lot line. If you're showing easement there.
But that goes over the lot line, so it's...
Well, the base of where they placed it, and
anything else that went over the lot line, that would not be allowed to plant a tree. You need to park on that.
We allow you to project 2 feet out of the building, and with the accessory structure being 5, they shouldn't have any ground.
No, my point is if Eves can't project building the lot.
Yes.
So.
In my opinion, like, it should be from the edge of the array, not from the base. Like, I think there needs to be very clear, like, the edge of the array can't be within 5 foot of the property line. That's the standard we want. And then that way, your base has to be in 10 feet to be able to do that. And you're then not putting something over on somebody else's property. That's how, I wouldn't go from the base. I would go from the edge of the array, whatever that is. If I were trying to decide how to site one. And so that would mean tweaking some of this a little bit.
What you're saying is leave it as an accessory structure so they have that allowance to go 5 feet to the property line, set the array of the panel itself.
If this were my solar array, this has to be 5 feet away. Like right here, like not the base, because then you end up with this situation again and again and again.
It's measured from this point right here.
It needs to be from the edge of that panel or the top of that panel, so the top can't come over here. That's what we're saying. It can't be this more than this side. And then it has to be, but what you're saying is it can go way over the property line as long as the base is
No.
But that's what it kind of sounds like.
Well, it says, the ground-mounted solar energy devices, it doesn't say the base, it says the devices, shall not be in place of anything. Yeah, and then that's a minimum yard setback for a ground-mounted solar energy device.
So that's the whole system would have to be...
Yeah, I would say that includes the edges and the top and everything else. Yeah. Like, if I put a basket over the top, that basket's 5 feet. But you know what I mean? Like that's how I would see it. Because this would totally, if it was going over my property line, I would, no.
So if we reduce this setback to 5 feet, but leave in the verbiage of the device, they can't.
I would call array, just because like the whole thing, it would be the array. So if I have more than one panel together, that would be the array. So the whole thing can't be closer than 5 feet.
So why are we saying, why are we reducing from 10 feet to 5 feet?
Because they were talking about the base, and I'm talking about the whole thing.
I'm not sure that they were
talking about the whole thing. Yeah.
I think what's being proposed is that the entire array has to be 10 feet from the property line. And what I'm hearing from you is that if we looked at this more like an accessory structure, it could be as little as 5 feet.
Well, you're not. If the 6 foot rule stands, like, you're not going to be seeing it from the other side of the fence. So, like, there's no.
We build a 6 foot fence.
Yeah, well, I mean, you.
Right, but the other point was we're trying to keep that in the
fence. But you already have that language, right? That it says that. So, we don't need that.
That's
true. If it meets the setbacks, and isn't in an easement, I think 5 feet's fine. If you're near an easement, then stay out of the easement. And that includes the whole footprint, shadow, you know, you put a board beside of it, it's 5 foot from that board, right? Like, it's not.
I have a question for staff. If somebody came in with a barn door, why do they actually have to submit? Do they have to submit a site plan with easements on it?
They do a site plan, and when, once they submit a site plan, we look at flat map, which we find any type of easements on the property, and how it's projected onto the property. So those are already being reviewed. The case-by-case basis would be for if they wanted to do it on a pole instead of a frame.
So, why it's a location, that's going to be checked as part of the
so our goal, as I understand, is to be able to approve the height with the application so they can go to the city council. And my question is, are we making too many applications? Do we need to take one from back, or do we just go ahead and agree what you understand about the applications to be an option? Do we feel we can do that tonight, or are we asking the staff for a lot of work?
I would like them to take another swipe at it. And the only reason why is like all of the safety stuff should be code, but it should be building code already and electrical code, or it shouldn't even be in.
Well, a lot of this is taken from other cities, their background in solar, and the language from here.
They have that in there.
It is, it's all the way.
Because I've got one out from another. From another state, but
try making that. That's where most of us.
So the basically it's pre-state,
I mean, those codes change all the time, so I wouldn't want to do anything that.
Well, we're not. I mean, if you reference the code without restating its specifics, then we're subject to whatever changes in law. If we actually specifically state what our safety requirements are, then we're not subject to the adoption of a new code or whatever. Unless you feel that we should be subject to that, and that's a better way to go, because it's always an improvement.
That's very subjective.
I felt comfortable with it, as we did have our building official review this.
Sure.
And that's where I felt comfortable submitting this.
Yeah, I'm part of this.
So I would be happy to come back with that, with some recommendations.
How about you read the modifications that you understand and see how much we think is doable now? I'd be fine never dealing with this again.
Okay, so let's start at the beginning, the location. Ground-mounted solar energy systems must be located such that they have a minimum visual impact on surrounding properties and public right-of-ways. Ground-mounted solar energy devices shall not be placed within any legal easement or right-of-way location or be placed within any stormwater conveyance system or in any other manner that would alter or impede stormwater runoff from collecting in a constructed stormwater conveyance system. B, setbacks. The minimum yard setbacks for ground-mounted solar energy devices from side and rear property lines is 10 feet and are prohibited within the front yard and side, street side yard enclosure areas. Height. The finished level of any ground-mounted solar energy device, which is the entire device, shall not be more than 6 feet above grade at any point. Any ground-mounted solar energy device with a height exceeding 6 feet at any point shall be allowed only with an administrative conditional use approval. Overall height of the structure shall not project above the existing home roof ridge line. Surface. The total surface area of the array ground-mounted solar energy device on the property shall not exceed 5% of the rear lot area. The example is 5,000 square feet lot, that would be rear lot, times 5% equals 250 square feet. Fencing, ground-mounted solar energy system shall be enclosed by a fence according to the provisions of section 10.5.18 of this chapter. Fencing must be in place prior to final inspection by the building official. Safety, all power transmission lines from ground-mounted solar energy device to any of the building or any structure shall be located underground and in accordance with applicable electrical code. Appropriate safety warning signage concerning voltage shall be placed at ground-mounted electrical devices, equipment, and structures. Fencing shall be locked to prevent unauthorized access or entry. Reduction in glare. All solar energy devices shall have a dark-colored surface finish on the majority of the device, excluding incidental framing parts, which shall be designed to reduce glare. H. Installation of solar system energy system shall be constructed per the currently adopted building codes. A city-approved building permit is required. 4. Solar energy easements are not a requirement of the city approval. Nonetheless, a property owner who has installed or intends to install a solar energy system may negotiate a solar easement with adjacent property owners to ensure perpetual sun on the property. Any easement agreement must be reported by the county recorder with a copy provided to the city. General provisions is abandonment.
Sounds like there was a change in that one.
Yeah. There's a slight change.
We had added on
to restoring the land and create solution conditions.
I thought we had added on number 2, small decorative systems, 3 feet in diameter or 7 feet square feet width. And then on the decorative or yard and security lighting, adding the word in security.
Okay, do we want to add those? Is that the intent here?
Okay. So that works for me. I don't recall any other suggested changes.
I don't like the discussion on that. I just don't, right? So, just from the limited research I did over the last week, it seemed like I was kind of small to cover a whole house, but I would think that these are brand new, which you're not looking to cover a whole house. So, kind of people that have the experience, is that enough for a grandma? Like, what's the average size of the grandma's 5%?
Well, this doesn't preclude anybody from putting solar systems on their own home, on their roof.
So
you would do both, most likely. So this would supplement so you could cover your whole home. Anything over and above your load, you can't really export on the grid anyway to be a battery store. Like it's not going anywhere. You can't sell it.
Would it be 5% sufficient? Well, that's just the question. Where, right? Are we going to approve 5%? Is that recommended? Like, is that what's the...
We could find out like what room requirements are here in the past, but it does seem a little arbitrary, but I don't know like what better number is at this point.
I squirm at the word arbitrary because in drafting code you've got to set a measure. It becomes arbitrary when it's being enforced differently. So if we say it's kind of like zoning, you know, if we say these lots are all going to be 10,000 square feet, how'd you come up with 10,000 square feet? That's just the way we envisioned our community. Why was it 11? I don't know. There's no good reason for it. But to call it arbitrary at this point, I think that's what we're saying. We don't want to see, if you're saying 5%, you're saying we don't want to see large ground mounted solar systems throughout our community. If you say 50%, then you're saying, hey, we're giving the thumbs up to large ground-mounted solar in our community. I think that's the way you've got to approach it.
So if we wanted to change it, I think it could be a combination of, like, again, the house footprint and a percentage of the backyard. Like, it has to be between those if we really wanted something that was, like, relevant to the size of the house that we're powering. If we don't don't want it to be relevant to the size of the house, the ground requirement is great.
I think that the roof of the house should be relevant to the size of the house that it's powering. So if you have an outbound building, if you want to have a jacuzzi in your chicken coop, fine, you can do 5% in your ground-mounted solar.
What if we set it at 5% and add the same language from sub C?
Or we can review it?
Yep.
If you have a 6-acre lot and you want to use 5%,
or 6%.
Yeah, I guess a little more comfortable with that. And I think there's got to be a not to exceed at some point, but maybe that's an administrative thing. Like, you just can't cover more than, you know, 25% of your back lawn or something like that. Whatever.
What would be the, let me ask this, what would be the criteria for allowing somebody to go from 5 to 25%? Because that's when I feel like it becomes arbitrary.
I think, well, no, I mean, again, back to that 20-acre
size. So yeah, no, I agree.
But back to that 20-acre lot or whatever it is, if they want to put a bunch in there, then it should be limited by the square footage of their house. They can't go more than 25% of the square footage of their house, something like that. I mean,
so you're saying an or, not an and.
Yeah, maybe.
Kind of sounds like definitely.
No, I think that definitely the house should limit it. Like, you can't go more than 8% of the footprint of your house, but also, you know, other criteria apply.
I'm fine with that. I have no strong feelings either way on this. I think that the more gray area there is, the more there becomes the opportunity for the decision to be somewhat arbitrary.
What's the public policy concern?
Public policy concern? That's a really good question. I really think that it becomes on, it's less about the square footage as it is about the height. Because when you, I think when you buy a house, you buy a house with the expectation that you're going to see your neighbor's houses. You're going to see structures. I don't think that you buy your house expecting to see ground-mounted solar all around you.
Well, what was the purpose of putting the limitation in there on the first place? On what? Surface.
On surface area? Just because we always limit the amount that people can put structures in their backyard. Like, you can't turn your whole backyard into an accessory structure.
Why not?
Because we're the heavy hand of government.
this is
a really good point in that we've had internal conversations on staff, like, why do I care what you do with your backyard? And for the most part, I really don't. You know, that's why we don't enforce landscaping requirements in your backyard. Somebody asked the question of, well, if I install a pickleball court in my backyard, does that pickleball court count towards landscaping, or is that a structure? And do I then not meet the intent of the 50% landscaping in the backyard? Quite frankly, I don't really care if you put a pickleball court in your backyard. I don't care if you put, you know, 300 square feet of solar panels in your backyard. It's your backyard. But if it encroaches or impedes the neighbor's enjoyment of their property, then I have a problem with
that. That's the public policy concern. So what does surface do to the neighbor?
If it's not visible, not much.
Then why have a 5%? It's already covered at 50%. And the concern is height. But if I have a 6-foot fence in half my backyard and a solar panel,
does the neighbor care?
Does the neighbor care? I mean, is there any care more pickleball court than my pickleball court?
Well, this arrived from the commissioner's request for percentage.
Well, the request was to identify what the impact, right? So does it count as an accessory structure, or does it count as, I think, give it some kind of limitation?
And Jenny, I think we assumed that the neighbors would be able to see it, right? And we were talking about...
Yeah, we could see it regardless. But again, we want to focus on not so much the square footage, but the height issue.
I think that's more important.
Just think out loud very quickly. I'm on TV meeting lots, or just near this neighborhood. So 10 feet back off the property lines, so they can know where to build space.
Okay.
Right. So.
The why?
So, I'm just kind of thinking out loud that 5% wall adverse is not necessary, because I'm already covered by the other points that you've already included in code, to your point. I frankly do like the limitation, so, because it just seems like, maybe it should get up to be a little bit, it seems like an adult kind of limitation. Somebody last year could move in and they didn't know how to.
Well, from my experience, if they can interpret it in a different way, they will.
So why not put it in the mounted solar system within number A? And limit that within A, right? So that it has to meet required setbacks, right? Well, that's kind of what you're saying. What? And it has to, if you just say this is, we are counting it, like you say, as an accessory dwelling unit, but although the lot, then it can't be more than 50%, it has to be X, Y, and Z.
Let me ask a question. So if you reduce the if you got rid of the surface area, are you okay with your neighbor's backyard being 100% solar?
Up to 10 feet from the property.
Are you okay with that?
Well, that's why
I think that's you've got to say, okay, let's reduce this argument to its most absurd conclusion. Here it is.
Yeah,
10 feet from
the.
Are you okay with that?
Can I see it or not?
From your second story house, you can see it.
I mean, they could have a pool or a sport court or whatever. So, one other way that this has been done, and again, I'm going to that out of state code, but the maximum area coverage of any solar, so this limits all solar, not just ground mounted, but it's the maximum is 50% of the footprint of the principal building served, and 25% of the footprint of the principal building served cannot be ground. So more than 25% can't be ground. So for the whole thing, 50% of the footprint, but only 25% of that 50, or yeah. So I'm not exceeding 25% of the footprint.
But they still have a limitation.
Yeah. So, yeah, absolutely. Like what I'm saying is tie it to the building and have the setbacks. So if you don't have room for it, you can't do it.
I like that.
The problem that I see with that is that if a particular lot has an accessory structure on it, has a pool on it, has all these that calculate that landscaping, and then they put these great big solar panels,
honestly, I don't think it has anything to do with landscaping. Really, it's a see-through structure. It's not like I'm setting a structure on top of the ground. It's light goes under the lip on both sides of it. It's not.
So what I'm saying though is if you're going to call it accessory structure and how it's defined currently as a code, then for landscaping, accessory structures cannot have a part of it. And that's the part that if we take that out, then it gives you a little bit more leeway for your property owners.
If you're talking about can I see it, well, it depends on your neighborhood. If your neighbor three houses away put ground mounted solar, there's a good chance you could see it.
I put a 6-foot fence. I'll see it from my second floor.
See it from your second floor, but like I'm thinking of this neighborhood here in the Cedars. That you have to have open fencing, and it has to be black wrought iron.
Yeah.
Meaning, like, if my neighbor put in ground-mounted solar, I can see it everywhere. So it's not, fencing itself is not enough to secure it or mask it or put up this veneer, because in some neighborhoods you could put up fencing and it meets these requirements, but all the neighbors can still see it. So, yes.
Everything's on a hill, so if you put me on the side of a hill, you're going to see it.
This neighborhood's not.
So there is an option that other cities, they put screen from adjacent properties by plant materials and or some type of visual screening. I mean, that could mitigate.
Yeah, I mean,
how
it's not even going to affect this one, the sore thumb.
No, it's not. That's the unfortunate
part. Just the
worst part. You've already got the worst example of it. I can get on board with a formula that incorporates the square footage, or not square footage, but the footprint of the main dwelling as the factor that determines the size of the solar system. I mean, what that looks like, I don't know.
I think that when you incorporate the size of the house, then you're almost limiting the number that are on the ground, because then it's encouraging.
But if you say 50% of the footprint of the main dwelling, I mean, that may not even be enough to generate enough power to cover the power of the main dwelling. And so then it defeats the purpose of people doing solar in the first place. So I don't have and no one has a problem with people putting solar panels on roofs. That's never come up. So I would hate to say that the total solar usage on the whole property is limited by the size, the footprint of that building to 50%, because then I think it really puts some severe limitations on people. But for ground-mounted solar purposes, I can see that being the driving factor.
We've talked it a lot. I guess I could be good with it either way. I just wanted to kind of draw some of the things, make sure we have a thorough enough discussion that everybody either had a
well, is there,
or wanted some help.
Is there a sentiment on the commission that they want to change this from a rear yard calculation to a building footprint calculation?
My feeling is that ground mounted is proportional. No.
I agree. That's why.
So 45% is the number. I'm not sure, but I want it to be proportional.
Okay. And I mean, you do have a 20-acre lot over there, but I can't imagine that they bought it so that they can put solar panels all over it.
So the remaining question is, if we all get on board with it as a proportion of the rear yard, I don't know how to make a difference.
It just seems hard to do backyard lot size.
I see.
Yeah. So, that's what John is concerned about. I understand the NCA, but it's just the calculation is not part of it. If they were on the river, kind of white pretty on the ground.
So, your two approaches is you just set the number to Jim's earlier point, or we look at what anybody else has.
I know what you're saying.
Any number is arbitrary. I mean, there's no science that says
subjective. Speed limits. We have to avoid using the word arbitrary, because if it's arbitrary, it's automatically illegal.
Well,
it's subjective.
Arbitrary is not illegal. Arbitrary and capricious is illegal.
You can have a statute overturned as arbitrary, or capricious, or illegal.
But in generating the code, it's not, I guess the point is in generating the code, that number, that's not necessarily arbitrary, because that's what you're envisioning the community, like I said. It's arbitrary in its application.
And this is, whatever number we get, it's open for public comment. It goes not just to us, but it goes to the council, but the public here and there. So I think that's the...
Personally, I'm okay with
100%.
It can always be amended. If I left it in digital form.
If you what? I'm
if
sorry.
If I had to leave in digital form. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So are we good with the 5% then, or is that the magic number here, or are we going to switch it up?
I just think I'm not gonna say I don't think it's arbitrary. I just think it just doesn't have motivated reasoning. That's what I want to say.
that's, if it's just, if it's like the amount that that's, right, I just don't know, I would be more, be a bit more accepting. But just to make sure that enough, if you need something.
I do your seven, I raise your ten.
Alright, okay.
I mean, sure.
Yeah.
Do ten.
Do you do 5% and then we run into this complicated residence or?
But I mean, if, I think if you add the conditional, right, if we add demonstrated conditional use on that side, right? Then the other one, if you're in the backyard, say, hey, this means, you know, we have to have six panels on the ground.
Chandler, are you concerned that that opens the door for someone to come in and just say, well, I want 10%? And here it says, like, we need to see.
Anytime we talk about conditional uses, I just want the direction to staff on granting the conditional use to be very clear. And I still think that portion of this might be vague. In that, if somebody came to me and said, hey, well, I want to apply for a conditional use because, you know, your code limits me to 250 square feet, but I need 290, just demonstrating the power need, I don't think is enough. I think there's got to be some overarching compelling reason to grant a conditional use, and I don't see what it is. I mean, because you could even go so far as, and I hate to throw this out there because I know we've been talking about this for a long time, but you could go so far as to just say, we're removing the conditional use portion of it. We're comfortable with the results of what we've set and saying, this is it. Conditional use opens up a door that I don't know that I necessarily love.
Well, any member here, even if it doesn't provide for a condition of use, they can still go to the request of variance.
They can. Yes, absolutely. And so in that case, they would have to demonstrate to the appeal authority compliance with those five criteria that's established by the state. And I would say that in most cases, like the vast majority of cases, they're going to come up short. It should be very difficult to get a variance. Otherwise, what's the point of the code?
But if they could show
some
statement, circumstance, however,
then yes, and that.
Then the number is the right person.
Yes, I agree. Yeah.
I just don't.
It might be that we don't do the administrative conditional use. That it's simply that you comply with this, and if you feel like you've been aggrieved or your situation is different than everyone else's, apply for a variance. I'm perfectly okay with that.
I think the idea behind conditional use approval was to take into account variation in lots, size, shape, topography.
I agree with that.
And that's where, instead of trying to set a standard and codify it, you're reviewing it on a case-by-case basis. And I don't see the surface issue being any different than the height issue in that regard. Now, I understand it puts a burden on staff, but I don't think it's an unreasonable task to say, come in and make the case, we'll review it, and if it doesn't create a burden on the neighbors, we're probably okay.
I guess if that's the direction, but then what am I trying to say here? Is that it seems like there has to be what's the criteria staff is looking for in granting the CUP?
So that you don't appear arbitrary.
You don't. So is it just the, I guess, the impact on the neighbors, is that what we're looking for? And is it a visual impact? Is it?
I think that's where we started.
I think if someone were to read these minutes, that would be the
theme here would be the visual impact of ground-mounted solar on the neighbors.
Or glare, or noise, or, I mean, there's a lot of things we've talked over the course of these different meetings that could have an impact on neighbors.
So I think then if that's the case, then I don't know that our current conditional use code really addresses visual impact as something to consider. Because we've always said, and Steve mentioned it earlier, we've always said view sheds are not protected. And that's because you get the people that, you know, build their lot, they enjoy their view of the mountain, and then the house gets built behind them and says, how on earth could you approve this lot when you knew that I had such a wonderful view?
Well, 3A says that ground-mounted solar just must be located such that they have minimal visual impact on surrounding properties.
So what are you getting a conditional use for? That's already the it's got to be the size of the panels.
It's got to be the surface area or the height.
Okay. As long as the direction is clear to staff on what the conditional use approval process looks like and what they're looking at, what criteria, then I can... We don't get enough of these applications that I feel like this is going to be an ongoing theme for the city. But at the same time, I don't want to set up the notion that, or the appearance that staff is being arbitrary in their application of the code.
So we could set it at 5% and then allow for administrative approval of the variation for any requested exception. That was your similar to 3C.
Okay, so then do you add a language in 3C that says that applicant must demonstrate, you know, limited impact on surrounding properties? I mean, it's kind of implied.
Yeah, no, I'm fine with putting it in there. It sends a clear message to the applicant.
Okay. And that might be sufficient enough to give staff saying, okay, what am I looking at this for?
So in other words, at the end of both 3C and 3D, we would add a statement that says,
applicant must demonstrate.
Okay, so that needs to be then applied to D as well.
C and D.
Okay. Everything else seems like that there's not going to be an administrative conditional use approval to override that, like safety, fencing, things like that.
Okay, yeah. But it's still, like you said, the people back there, so everybody's back there. So there's not a living room.
We're also not applying the CUP to setbacks.
No.
It's simply height, surface area.
Okay. One other point. Can we address this in the conversation? Although this section doesn't address public utility and public exemptions, state that's covered by the other section. Just as that.
So if you look at most of these systems that are signs in public facilities, you're not going to go much over that 7-foot aggregate limitation.
I agree with that. And since that's addressed in another section, not even codified, just put a reference in. So somebody reading the code.
I would even just point blank just add an exception for public utilities.
Okay.
I'm comfortable doing that just because people do want to receive water, I'm assuming. And we have to have solar panels because we don't have power in some locations.
As long as it's in your sun.
Okay.
So this section, another one, but somebody reading this and says, well, wait a minute, there's something on the stop sign.
Okay.
If there's a line addressed either here or a reference to it.
Okay.
So do we want this under the small battery systems, the exception of the company?
No, I put it in just the general whole system.
Yeah.
Whole renewable energy systems, not necessarily associated with ground-mounted solar, but with anything.
So is it not pretty high?
No, I think it would go elsewhere in 10.5.38, because 3 is sec is portion 3 is with related to ground-mounted solar energy systems. It would have to be just somewhere at the end of the code, making sure that there's a blanket exemption for city utilities. Can. We've got to move to table this one.
Table.
I've been, that was about an hour longer than I thought it would go.